ओम ज्ञानतमिनन्दस्य जनजनसलकया चक्षुसमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन वितरे स्वयं प्रकदमयं भगवति स्वप्नम् वंशकपटुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यश्च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. We're hearing the prayers of Maharaj Chitraketu after he's seen the Lord. He's chanted a mantra, not one mantra, but quite a few prayers in the form of mantras. And then, by the power of those mantras, his heart has been purified, and the Lord has kindly appeared before him. Then, when the Lord was before him, he began to speak to the Lord, offering him praise and speaking of his glories. We heard some of those prayers yesterday and the day before. Yesterday. Explaining how the Lord was Ananta. His great, incredibly, inconceivably great power. How there are unlimited universes, and those universes have coverings that are so much bigger than the universes themselves. So when we look up in a starless night, we get some idea, even though it is obviously not accurate. Get an idea of how huge, how vast the universe is. Let's get a glimpse of it. And there are unlimited universes, and these unlimited universes are compared to like atoms within the Lord. In other words, the Lord is so great. And we've also heard that this great Lord, the Lord who is so great, is also a person, a most wonderful person who has lotus feet, and which the devotees massage, and a wonderful smile, and a helmet upon his head. And that his existence is always in the three phases of time, of past, present, and future. He exists in all those. So he is unlimited. And then in the last two verses that we heard, the topic slightly switched. That if a person wanting something material, not exactly wanting to please the Lord, this great all-powerful Lord, which is our natural consciousness, to wish to please him, if someone, due to his the abundance of material desires that are blooming within his heart, doesn't worship the Lord, but worships the various demigods. Is it dead? Worships the demigods and doesn't worship the Lord to gain those desires. Such a person is very, very foolish. He's compared to be like an animal in the form of a human. And if one worships the demigods, even if one attains benedictions from them, because the demigods are vanquished within time, so the benedictions will similarly be vanquished as well. But yet, on the other hand, even if one has material desires and one worships the Lord, Supreme Lord, even though his worship may not be considered perfect, but gradually, eventually, because he's holding on to the Lord, he will escape from this incredibly complex network of birth and death. So, although it's not mentioned here, but so many times it is mentioned throughout the Bhagavatam, one very important verse from the second canto, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udharadi tivrena bhakti yogenaya jeta purusha para. That even if one is akam, he has no desires, or sarvakam, he's full of desires, or mokshakam, or desires to be liberated, still, if one worships that Supreme Personality of Godhead, trying to please Him, even if his motive is to gain these things, yajeta purushapara, he will gradually, through the power of that bhakti, of that devotion that he will develop, he will gradually wash away all the material desires, just as the rushing water of the Ganges washes away all types of rocks, even though there may be great boulders in the middle of it. It's so powerful, it pushes these away and moves them. So similarly, even if one has material desires, and who will say that they don't have material desires? Still, one should worship no one but the Lord. But then again, starting in text 40, the topic changes again to a different type of worshiper. One who doesn't worship the Lord to gain something material, which is glorious, even if one does that, it's not perfectly pure, yet it's considered glorious. But yet, this type of worship that is described here is still more glorious, and it's called Bhagavad Dharma. And this Bhagavad Dharma has been mentioned many times in the sixth canto, and it will be mentioned by Prahlad Maharaj in the seventh canto as well. Bhagavad Dharma means, Bhagavad means of the Lord, and Dharma means that religion, his own religion. And it is a non-sectarian religion. And what does Bhagavad Dharma mean? What's the basic precept of Bhagavad Dharma? The Lord's religion is that the living entity is his servant. And this is the natural position of every living entity. And in the material world, rather than living in our true identity in connection with the Lord, instead we set ourselves up with false ego. Ego means identity. So we set ourselves up with a false ego, a false identity. And that false identity is contrary to our real ego of Jivera Sarupoi, Krishna Nityadas, of Krishna's servant in so many different ways. And instead of being Krishna's servant, we wish ourselves to be a master in this world. We wish to be the enjoyer. We wish to be the center. We wish things were revolving around us. And this is what makes the world go round. So if someone gives up the false ego, which is everyone's religion, basically, the religion of false ego, and seeing how big they can make their false egos, how huge and powerful. But regardless of how much of a network of false ego we're able to spread in this world, so we can control a country, we can kill 6-10 million people at our whim, we can have everyone terrified of us, we can have this whole network set up and have so much unlimited riches and armies and loyal followers, but death will annihilate the whole thing. And we will be terrified in our whole expanse of false ego. Why? Because we know we're bluffing. That's why. However our false ego expands with us in the center, we all know that we are bluffing, and therefore everyone is afraid of so many competitors. And if anyone comes and has some power that's near us, we feel threatened. No matter how powerful we are, this is the nature of false ego. Everything is a threat to us because we're standing on very shaky grounds. Our foundation is illusion, falsity. So Bhagavad Dharma means giving up the religion of illusion, trying to place myself in the center, and simply acting to please Krishna, naturally, spontaneously, with full loving affection, actions to please God, Krishna. And the process of Krishna consciousness is the process, and all the rules and regulations that we follow and all the philosophy is to bring us to that state where we naturally love and serve Krishna. So here is what Chitraketu says. There are several verses on this point. O unconquerable one, when you spoke about Bhagavad Dharma, which is the uncontaminated religious system for achieving the shelter of your lotus feet, that was your victory. Persons who have no material desires, like the Kumaras, we've heard about them in the Bhagavatam, the third canto especially, who are self-satisfied sages, worship you to be liberated from material contamination. In other words, they accept the process of Bhagavad Dharma to achieve shelter at your lotus feet. Here's Prabhupada's purport. As stated by Srila Rupa Goswami in Bhaktivinoda Sindhu, Anya Abhilasita Sunyam Gyana Kamara Navrita Anukulena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Uttama. One should render transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord favorably. That means the mood is to please favorably and without desires for material profit or gain. How? Through fruit of activities or philosophical speculation. With a loving mood, seeking to please him, but not to gain anything, just to please him. Not to gain anything on the level of becoming one with him, or to get something material in exchange for the service. No. Just to please him. That is called pure devotional service. The Narada Pancharatra also says, Savopari Vane Muktam Tat Paradvena Nimalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. One should be free from all material designations. What's a material designation? Any upadi, Sarva Upadi Vane Muktam, any designation such as our nationality, such as our height, such as our gender, such as our any identity that we place upon ourselves based on our material body or mind and not based upon our eternal identity as a soul. This is called the designation, like a little sign that we hang on ourselves. I am this, I am that, I am that, I am old, I am young, I am strong, I am intelligent, I'm this, I'm that. These little signs that designate who we temporarily think we are. So all those, sarva upadi, upadi means designations, sarva, all upadis, vinyamuktam, gotten rid of. What's left? If we got rid of all these things, would there be anything left? Yes, who we actually are is left. So Bhagavad Dharma means, so one should be free, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite. One should be free from all material designations and cleansed of all material contamination. He should be restored to his pure identity in which he engages his senses in the service of the proprietor of the senses. So our senses, our body should be used in the service of he who actually owns all the senses, Rishikesh, the Lord. That is called devotional service. When one does that from his actual pure identity as a servant of Krishna, being fixed in that identity, the soul's identity, not the false ego's so many designations, but being fixed in that eternal identity, serving the Lord with everything we have, with the senses and everything we have, that is called devotional service. This is also called Bhagavad Dharma. Without material aspirations, one should simply serve Krishna, as advised in Bhagavad Gita, Narada Pancharatra, and Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Dharma is the process of religion enunciated by pure devotees, direct representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Narada, Sukadeva Goswami, and their humble servants in the disciplic succession. By understanding Bhagavad Dharma, one immediately becomes free from material contamination. Living entities who are part and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are loitering in this material world suffering. What a phrase. They're loitering in this material world. When you think of the word loitering, what do you think of?
Hanging around.
Just hanging around. Doing what? Just hanging around, wasting time, doing nothing, nothing to do. So the living entities are loitering in the material world, suffering, just hanging out on the different street corners of the material world. And what are they doing? What does it amount to? Suffering. Trying to find something, some satisfaction to fill the emptiness of the heart, and getting only misery, the opposite of what we want. When they are instructed by the Lord Himself about Bhagavad Dharma and they adopt it, that is a victory for the Lord, for He can then reclaim these fallen souls. A devotee following the principles of Bhagavad Dharma feels very much obligated to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can understand the difference between life without Bhagavad Dharma and life with Bhagavad Dharma, and thus he ever remains obliged to the Lord. I like that. Taking to Krishna consciousness and bringing fallen souls to Krishna consciousness is victory for the Lord, for Lord Krishna. Savaipamsam parodharma yatir bhaktir hobshaje ahaituki apatiyataya yatma supasidati. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Therefore, Srimad Bhagavatam is the pure transcendental process of religion. Text 41. So this is pure religion. This is the actual expression of the soul's eternal identity. And the processes that bring us to that position are called bhakti or Bhagavad Dharma or actual religion. Text 41. Being full of contradictions, all forms of religion but Bhagavad Dharma work under the conceptions of fruitive activities and distinctions of you and I and yours and mine. The followers of Srimad Bhagavatam have no such consciousness. They are all Krishna conscious, thinking that they are Krishna's and Krishna is theirs. There are other low-class religious systems which are contemplated for the killing of enemies or the gain of mystic power, but such religious systems, being full of passion and envy, are impure and temporary. Because they are full of envy, they are full of irreligion. Again, the definition of actual religion and the religious processes are those that bring us to our true position in relationship to Krishna. But there are sometimes religious activities that don't have this as their goal, but rather, contrarily, have selfish things as their goal. So that type of religion is not actually religion. It's cheating religion, or religion based on envy, envy of others, and even envy of God. Why? Because if I am in the center, If I am in the center of the process, it is illusion and based on my envy of God. So if a religion that places me and material desires in the center to gain things for me, to get rid of people who I don't like, this is envious religion, cheating religion actually, and irreligion. They're actually irreligion. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Bhagavad Dharma has no contradictions. Conceptions of your religion and my religion are completely absent from Bhagavad Dharma. Bhagavad Dharma means following the orders given by the Supreme Lord, Bhagavan, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadhammam Pratyajam Mamekam Sharanam Braja. God is one, and God is for everyone. Therefore, everyone must surrender to God. That is the pure conception of religion. Whatever God orders constitutes religion. Dhammam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam. That was from Dhammaraj's words to his messengers earlier in the sixth canto. In Bhagavad Dharma, there is no question of what you believe and what I believe. Everyone must believe in the Supreme Lord and carry out his orders. One should give himself fully to the pleasure of the Lord. Anukulena Krishnanushilanam. Whatever Krishna says, whatever God says, should be directly carried out. That is Dharma, religion. If one is actually Krishna conscious, he cannot have any enemies. Since his only engagement is to induce others to surrender to Krishna or God, how can he have any enemies? If one advocates the Hindu religion, the Muslim religion, the Christian religion, this religion or that religion, there will be conflicts. History shows that the followers of religious systems without a clear conception of God have fought with one another. There are many instances of this in human history, but systems of religion that do not concentrate upon service to the Supreme are temporary and cannot last for long because they are full of envy. There are many activities directed against such religious systems, and therefore one must give up the idea of my belief and your belief. Everyone should believe in God and surrender unto Him. That is Bhagavad Dharma. And there's more in this purport. We'll go on. Text 42. How can a religious system that produces envy of oneself and of others be beneficial for oneself and for them? What is auspicious about following such a system? What is actually to be gained? By causing pain to one's own self due to self-envy, and by causing pain to others, one arouses the Lord's anger, and practices irreligion. So this is speaking of religious systems that do not cause, that don't bring others to the Lord's service. And as Prabhupada will explain in his purport, his concept of others is very broad, not only humans, but all living entities. So Krishna consciousness is very, very clear about this, that where there is life, that means there is a soul. And someone who is truly kind, who is truly awake in his relationship with God, with Krishna, he is interested in bringing all living entities, awakening all living entities, regardless of what their current situation is, to their actual, natural, constitutional position in Krishna's service. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Read part of it. Any religious system but the process of Bhagavad Dharma, service as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a system of envy of one's own self and of others. For example, there are many systems of religion in which animal sacrifices are recommended. Such animal sacrifices are inauspicious both for the performer and for the animal. Although one is sometimes permitted to sacrifice an animal before the goddess Kali and eat it instead of purchasing meat from a slaughterhouse, permission to eat meat after a sacrifice in the presence of the goddess Kali is not the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is simply a concession for the miserable person who will not give up eating meat. It is meant to restrict his desire for unrestricted meat eating. Such a religious system is condemned. Therefore, Krishna says, Sovadamam Prityajam Mame Kam Sharanam Braja. Give up all other duties and surrender unto me. That is the last word in religion. So if one, and here is an example, that if one considers himself religious, but is killing animals, why? Because I like the taste of them. That's the only reason. If one needed an animal to eat animal flesh to maintain his own life, that's one thing. But we're not talking about that. But when one lines up animals and mercilessly, cold-heartedly, cruelly, callously arranges for them to be killed because I like the taste of their ribs or their tongue or their toes or their heart or their thighs or whatever, how envious is such a practitioner? How hard-hearted one must be to be like that. How he cannot, how he does not at all mind causing suffering to other living entities for his own selfish pleasure, which is not required at all to maintain his life. So if one acts in a cruel way like that, one's heart becomes contaminated. One's heart becomes hard. One's heart becomes further covered. And what we want to do, and the purpose of religion, is to remove the coverings from the heart, not add further coverings. So Prabhupada preaches very, very strongly about these things, because the Krishna conscious philosophy, the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, of Srimad Bhagavatam, of Bhagavad Dharma, is very, very clear about these things. Very concise and clear, with no gray areas. So acting as Krishna's servant to please the Lord, this is the way that a devotee actually discriminates between what he does and what he doesn't do. It's a very, very clear path. And if we have other desires, it's a path that's hard to follow. But if we surrender ourselves to Krishna, if we're that serious, if we love him so much that we want to please him, that is the mode of discrimination. What will actually please him? Having full knowledge and full faith that what will be pleasing to him will also be most pleasing to me, ultimately. But the actions one performs to please Krishna, to please God, when they are done with love, they are not done to get oneself pleasure, but getting pleasure is natural, just like when we feed, put the food in our mouth, the whole body, the fingers, also gain strength and nourishment. Tushti pushti chudapaya anugasan bhakti paresh anubhava viraktiya. When one performs devotional service to Krishna, bhakti, naturally what happens is one becomes detached from the world. Naturally that what happens is one is himself is nourished. Pushti, tushti. Tushti means satisfied. Naturally one oneself feels satisfied. If the heart is right in Bhagavad Dharma, if it is actually surrendered on all the different levels, not only surrendered on the external level, but thinking something different inside. But surrendered means fully surrendered. That's bhakti. So we aspire to actually be devotees, bhaktas, knowing well that that will give us everything that we've ever longed for. And other, without criticizing other religious practices that don't clearly explain that who are we? We are servants of God. We are meant to serve Him and act for His pleasure. They are not proper religions. And all true religious teachers teach this. This is actually the teaching of Lord Jesus, of Muhammad, of all true teachers, and there are so many. They're teaching the one religion, actually, of Bhagavad Dharma, or surrender to God. And actually, Islam. You know what the actual meaning of it is? For instance, it means surrender. So there are different paths, but unfortunately, people become so attached to the particular methodology of their path and become sectarian and see others as enemies. But everyone is actually on one path. Yayitam mam papajyante. And according to their sincerity, surrendering, their position, they are moving forward on that path. So Prabhupada explains in the last part of this purport, Dhammos venustita pungsan Vishvakchena katasya notpadaye yadira tin shrame evi kevanam. Duties, dharma, religious activities executed by men, regardless of occupation, are only so much useless labor if they do not provoke attraction for the message of the Supreme Lord. Following a system of religion that does not awaken one's Krishna consciousness, one's love for Krishna, for God, or God consciousness, is merely a waste of time and labor. Text 43. My dear Lord, Chitra Ketu says, one's occupational duty, the duty one performs, is instructed in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita according to your point of view, which never deviates from the highest goal of life, not pushing us to the left or to the right, but duties that come from the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, they may be on different levels, but they are pushing us in this one direction, instructing us so we can go in this one direction, the highest goal of life, and that is prema, or love for Krishna, prema paramartha mahan. So these duties, instructions of the duties, are all according to your, God's point of view, Krishna's point of view, which never deviate from the highest goal of life. Those who follow their occupational duties under your supervision, being equal to all living entities, moving and non-moving, and not considering high and low, are called Aryans. Such Aryans worship you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'm going to read some of Prabhupada's purport. Bhagavad Dharma and Krishna Katha are identical. Krishna Katha means the hearing or the words about Krishna. Katha means the topics. Krishna Katha, the topics about Krishna. Bhagavad Dharma and Krishna Katha are identical. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone to become a guru and preach the instructions of Krishna everywhere from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, the Puranas, Vedanta Sutra, and similar Vedic literatures. Aryans who advanced in civilization follow Bhagavad Dharma. Prahlad Maharaj, although merely a child of 5 years, recommends, Komanam acharet pragyo dhaman bhagavatani ha dolava manusha janma tarap atruvam artidam. Prahlad Maharaj preached Bhagavad Dharma among his classmates as soon as an opportunity was afforded by the absence of his teachers from the classroom. He said that from the very beginning of his life, from the age of 5, children should be instructed about Bhagavad Dharma because the human form of life which is very rarely obtained, is meant for understanding this subject. Dolabham means rare, manusha janma. So rare is a human birth. And with that, adruvam artidam. Artidam means the greatest gain can be attained. Juvam. Although this life is temporary like other lives, we're going to die, we're born, we live for some time, we die, but still, if we use our life properly, we can gain the most wonderful thing, and that is to awaken, fully awaken our love for Krishna. So human life is meant for understanding this, and then further on in the purport. More about Aryans. Aryans do not deviate from the instructions of Krishna, nor do they have doubts about Krishna. But non-Aryans and other demoniac people fail to follow the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. This is because they have been trained in sense gratification at the cost of all other living entities, because sense gratification means exploitation. So when we enjoy, when we are selfish, we are not thinking of elevating others and what's good for others. We are thinking about our selfish self. And as one devotee in Vrindavan says, he says that I am the worst kind of fish, a selfish. Because selfish, no matter what he says, he's looking to gain something from another. He's not thinking of the benefit of another. There's no love in his heart. But a devotee, true devotee, there is only love in his heart because there's love for Krishna, there's love for all living entities. So therefore, as Prabhupada said before, his desire is to help every living entity, whether they're in a movable body or an immovable body. He doesn't see a distinction. He sees the soul, pandita, samadarshana. He sees there's souls everywhere, and his desire is so great, his love is expanded so great, not only to one person or one family or one community or one race or one nation, or even all of humanity. His love has expanded and his desire is to help every living entity. So how great is a devotee? Nunam pramatakuriteva karma. Their only business is to indulge in all kinds of forbidden activities for sense gratification. Yarindriya pritya pranoti. They deviate in this way because they want to gratify their senses. They have no other occupation or ambition. Their method of civilization is condemned in the previous verse. Kachemo nija parayo kiyan vartasva paradruha dharmena. What is the meaning of a civilization that kills oneself and others? This verse therefore advises that everyone become a member of the Aryan civilization and accept the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should conduct his social, political, and religious affairs according to his instructions, so that even though we may not be the most exalted souls, pure, and we may not be able to act on that pure level, but let at least all the activities of our social life, our intellectual life, our political life, our religious life, be directing us in the right direction as opposed to an opposite direction. And contemporary civilization, which isn't based on a goal of God, but based on the goal of economics, which means sense enjoyment, leads people in the opposite direction of their own welfare. So Prabhupada was a real revolutionary. So he said, we are spreading this Krishna consciousness movement to try to establish a society the way that Krishna wants it. This is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. We are therefore presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is and kicking out all kinds of mental concoction. Prabhupada was so strong. Fools and rascals interpret Bhagavad Gita in their own way. When Krishna says, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru, always think of me and become my devotee, worship me and offer your homage unto me, they comment that it is not Krishna to whom we must surrender. Thus they derive imaginary meanings from Bhagavad Gita. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, strictly follows Bhagavad Dharma, the instructions of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, for the complete welfare of human society. One who misinterprets Bhagavad Gita, twisting out some meaning for his sense gratification, is a non-Aryan. Therefore, commentaries on Bhagavad Gita by such persons should be immediately rejected. One should try to follow Bhagavad Gita as it is. In Bhagavad Gita, 12th chapter, 6, verses 6 through 7, Lord Krishna says, Yetu savani kamani mai sanyasya matpara ananyena eva yogena mam dhyayanta upasate tesham maham samudata mityu samsarasagarat bhavamina chiratparta maya veshita chetasam. For one who worships me, giving up all his activities unto me, Krishna says, and being devoted to me, Krishna, without deviation, engaged in devotional service and always meditating upon me, Krishna, who has fixed his mind upon me, O son of Prita, for him I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. Text 44. My Lord, it is not impossible for one to be It is not impossible for one to be immediately freed from all material contamination by seeing you. Not to speak of seeing you personally, merely by hearing the holy name of your lordship, only once, even chandalas, men of the lowest class, are freed from all material contamination. Under the circumstances, who will not be freed from material contamination simply by seeing you? So Chitrakesu Maharaj is speaking of his own good fortune, for he is seeing the Lord right before him. And this is the last of Prabhupada's longish purports here, and I'd like to read it all in this section. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 9.5.16, Yanama Shruti Matrena Pumam Bhavati Nirmala. Simply by hearing the holy name of the Lord, one is immediately purified. Therefore, in this age of Kali, when all people are very contaminated, the chanting of the holy name of the Lord is recommended as the only means of improvement. Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Harir Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kaloa Nasteva, 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 Gati Aniyata. In this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the only means of deliverance is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. There is no other way, there is no other way, there is no other way. Brihad Naradiya Purana. That's quoting from there. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu introduced this chanting of the holy name 500 years ago. And now, through the Krishna consciousness movement, the Hare Krishna movement, we are actually seeing that men who are considered to belong to the lowest class are being delivered from all sinful activities simply by hearing the holy name of the Lord. Samsara, material existence, is a result of sinful actions. Everyone in this material world is condemned. Condemned to what? Condemned to death. We're on death row. It's just a matter of time. Everyone is condemned. Yet, as there are different grades of prisoners, there are different grades of men. All of them, in all statuses of life, are suffering. To stop the suffering of material existence, one must take to the Hare Krishna movement of Sankirtan, or Krishna conscious life. Herein it is said, Yanama Sakrit Shravanat. The holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so powerful that if once heard without offenses, it can purify the lowest of men. Kirat Hunandra. Hunandra Pulinda Pulkasa. Such men who are called chandals are less than sudras, less than workers, less than lower people. But they can also be purified by simply by hearing the holy name of the Lord, not to speak of personally seeing the Lord. From our present position, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be personally seen as the deity in the temple. The deity of the Lord is not different from the Supreme Lord, because even deity, the word means God. The deity of the Lord is not different from the Supreme Lord, because we cannot see the Supreme Lord with our present blunt eyes. The Lord has kindly consented to come before us in a form we can see. Therefore, the deity in the temple should not be considered material. By offering food to the deity and by decorating and serving the deity, one can get the same result that one derives from serving the Lord personally in Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. Therefore, my dear Lord, simply seeing you has now wiped away all the contamination of sinful activities and their results of material attachment and lusty desires, which always filled my mind and the core of my heart. Whatever is predicted by the great sage Narada Muni cannot be otherwise. In other words, I have obtained your audience as a result of being trained by Narada Muni. Prabhupada's purport. This is the process of the perfect way. One must take lessons from authorities like Narada, Vyasa, and Asita, and follow their principles. With our blunt eyes and other senses, we cannot perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if we engage our senses in the service of the Lord according to the instructions of the authorities, it will be possible to see Him. As soon as one sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all the sinful reactions in the core of one's heart are certainly vanquished. He continues, O unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead, whatever a living entity does in this material world is well known to you, because you are the Supersoul. You're in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. In the presence of the sun, there is nothing to be revealed by the light of a glowworm, simply because you know everything. In your presence, there is nothing for me to make known. My dear Lord, you are the creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this cosmic manifestation. But persons who are too materialistic and who always see separateness do not have eyes with which to see you. They cannot understand your real position, and therefore they conclude that the cosmic manifestation is independent of your opulence. My Lord, you are the Supreme Pure, and you are full in all six opulences. Therefore I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. We'll read the final verse in his words and then read that purport. My dear Lord, it is after you endeavor that Lord Brahma, Indra, and the other directors of the cosmic manifestation become occupied with their activities. It is after you perceive the material energy, my Lord, that the senses begin to perceive. The Supreme Personality of Godhead holds all the universes on his heads like seeds of mustard. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. That Supreme Personality who has thousands of hoods. Talking to Ananta Shesha. Or Shankashana Shesha. Prabhupada's purport. Atheistic men think that the cosmic manifestation has come about by chance, by a combination of matter, without reference to God. Materialistic so-called chemists and atheistic philosophers always try to avoid even the name of God in relation to the cosmic manifestation. For them, God's creation is impossible to understand because they are too materialistic. Because according to one's mind, one sees. When an expert carpenter walks in someone's house, he sees one thing. When an antique seller walks into another house, he sees something completely different. When a person whose expertise is music walks into a house, he'll see something completely different. And when a devotee walks in a house, he'll see something completely different again. So according to one's mind, one sees. So a devotee, wherever he looks, he sees God. And God has created. Wherever he looks, he'll see God is behind everything. And a non-devotee, he never can see God. No matter how hard he looks, no matter how big his atom smasher is, he can never see the Lord. How many atoms and subatomic particles he bangs into each other and cracks open, he'll never find God. But for a devotee, he can see God everywhere, and there's no place he looks where he doesn't see him. It's all one's consciousness. So for them, the materialistic persons, God's creation is impossible to understand because they are too materialistic. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is Paramahansa, or the Supreme Pure, whereas those who are sinful, being very much attached to material sense enjoyment and therefore engaging in material activities like asis, are the lowest of men. All their so-called scientific knowledge is null and void because of their atheistic temperament. Thus they cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So those are the words of Chitraketu to Lord Ananta or Shesha. Sukadev Goswami continued. The Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Anantadev, being very much pleased with the prayers offered by Chitraketu, the king of the Vidyadharas, replied to him as follows, O best of the Kuru dynasty, Maharaj Pratik. Okay, so we'll stop here. And if Krishna allows, tomorrow we'll hear some of the words of Anantadev. Theoretically, we'll finish the chapter. But let's see. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yep. He was elevated by saying the prayers that Narada Muni gave him. He was actually the king of a different place, Sarasena, but he was actually elevated to become, by saying these prayers as an intermediate result before seeing the Lord. He was elevated to the position of a Vidyadhara, the king of the Vidyadharas, which is a more elevated position than an earthling. It doesn't explain much more than that, but we'll hear a little about it in the next chapter.
Like a demigod.
Yeah, like a, not actually, a Vidyadhara I don't think is a demigod, but it's a more subtle, powerful, higher being.
That's slightly off the point. They say there's 33 million demigods. Does that include the citizens of the heavenly planets, or is that just the...
I think those are more like positions.
They're just the positions.
I think so. That's my understanding. Like government, if you tallied up all the government servants in a particular country, they're individuals, but there's positions also. So the positions are what that tally, I believe, indicates. Well, if I'm right. Do you want to?
I was wondering, is there any insight as to why it was Lord Anantadev repeat for marriage?
It's Anantadev, but his worshipable deity is Shankarshan. Actually, that comes out later. Actually, it came out earlier because that's whom Vitrasura. It was his worshipable deity. And if one... So Anantashesha is an expansion of Shankarshan. So his worshipable deity is actually Shankarshan. And in the picture of Chitraketu speaking to his worshipful Lord, it doesn't show him in any other form. 698. I think it may come... a little bit later. Maybe there'll be something more on this later. 698. Reference for the picture is 698. Doesn't say much about the form. No, I don't know more than that. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's Shankarshan. Mm-hmm. By the description. Any other questions?
Shankarshan, what does that mean?
Whoops. Kashan means means the attractor of everyone, something like that maybe. Kasha means attraction. So he's an expansion of Balaram. And from those expansions of Balaram come from Shankarshan comes Mahashankarshan, and from Mahashankarshan comes Mahavishnu, and from Mahavishnu, etc., the material energy expands. So this Shankarshan is one of the, he's a lord of Vaikuntha, like that. But I don't know why he got those mantras that would attract him to come. Any other questions that I don't know the answer of?
Sorry.
It's all right. I'm used to it. Yeah.
Sometimes when we surrender to Krishna, it feels painful or you feel some purification. But does that surrender naturally lead to devotion or is there something else?
Full surrender is devotion. When we fully give ourselves to Krishna, that's devotion. And but our steps towards that sometimes are painful, because when we take a step in that direction, what becomes revealed is the impurities in our heart. So that the revelation of the impurities, it's like by cleansing one layer, something, as we're moving towards cleansing towards the heart, it's revealing something that we may have previously been unaware of, and that's painful, something that's not attractive, and some petty selfishness. So those kind of things should be painful. What do we do? We just accept the pain. Actually, and that almost stops it just by not fighting it. Just accept it. Yes, Krishna, this is my karma. But surrender isn't the cause of the pain in that sense. It's the impurities that are causing the pain. And the impurities are actually stopping us from true surrender. And if we fully surrendered ourselves, sort of from the inside out, then there wouldn't be anything, any difficulty. But it's hard for us to get to the inside, to the core of our true self, to our actual identity. So many, it's like peeling an onion or something. There's layer after layer after layer. But by chanting, and if we keep ourselves fixed, it happens. But we have to give up so many things that aren't us. So many aspects of our false identity, so many upadis. So therefore devotional service was defined as sarva upadi, all designations. Vinyamukta, tat paradvena niyamalam. That all these designations given up, and from the pure self, niyamalam, the spotlessly clean pure self, no, the faultless self, our actual identity, from that point serving with great devotion. But it happens. Slowly or quickly, depending upon who we are and how covered we are. And what we want. What we actually want.
Any other questions or comments?
To really see Krishna in this life is something kind of...
Is what?
To really see Krishna in this life.
Yes.
There's so many devotees, but probably only a few will really feel him and really see him in this life.
No. I think the many devotees do see him and feel him, but to different degrees. I think when we chant Hare Krishna, when we read the Bhagavatam or hear the Bhagavatam, when we see the deity, when we go to Vrindavan, when we associate with devotees, the touching of the heart that we experience is really feeling Krishna. But it's not a fully developed feeling yet. That fully, fully, completely developed feeling is for the spiritual world, actually. The devotional service is compared to a planting of a seed. So that seed is not of the material world even. But that seed, if we water that seed and keep weeds away from that seed and protect that seed, it will grow up and actually transcend, go beyond the material world and take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna in the spiritual world and there give its fruit of love. So this body, it has been said that it can't even contain that kind of love. But we can perhaps attain what's called bhava bhakti when we're in the spiritual world, but our relationship with Krishna is manifest. Our actual eternal relationship with Krishna is just manifest in our heart. Maybe I'm not being so clear, but we can attain that. So if your question was, is that very rare that someone attains that stage, even of bhava bhakti, where he actually has the seed? See, right now we're striving to get out of the material world into the spiritual world. The person who has bhava bhakti, he's already there in the spiritual world, but it's still a little immature. It's not fully blossomed yet. So that, Rupa Goswami says, is sudolabha. Sudolabha means rare. It is rare. But it's not so rare, Jiva Goswami explains. It's not so rare that we should think we can't get it. If we take to the process seriously and don't commit offenses, yes, we too can attain that. Prabhupada once said, I think it's in Korma's book. He said, if you think that you'll get top grades on an exam, come out first, maybe you'll come out second or third. If you think you'll come out fourth, you'll come out eighth. If you think you'll come out eighth, you'll come out 20th. So he said that in reference that we should really try to get this. We should really try to get this high thing, this wonderful thing, that may be very, very, very rare. And then we may not get that topmost, but we'll get so far along the way that it will be burning so brightly in us that there won't be any turning back, and we'll complete it. And we'll get it, and it's just a matter of time. So we should really try for that.
But it's something karmic.
Karmic?
Yeah.
No. It's something other than karmic. It's
but
something...
A lot of people give up in battle, actually, to love Krishna, to see Krishna.
Yeah.
A lot of people give up after years, and it's maybe not for them in this life, so then it's something karmic.
There's something other than karmic involved. It's Krishna. See, Bhagavad Dharma, once you practice Bhagavad Dharma, and what's different from Bhagavad Dharma than other religions or practices is that it's a descending practice. That it's really based, when you're acting to try to please Krishna, even in an immature, even a very immature way, then Krishna becomes inspired to help you. He puts you under his care, even from our immature stage. So, when one goes on for some time, he seems to have the limitations of his karma, but actually he is under Krishna's care, who is the Lord of karma. He is the controller of karma. He can nullify everything like that. But he has his own way of acting, and of course we'd like him to give it to us immediately, because we like to get what we want, because we're the center of things, and we'd like to go there and take photos and come back and put on slideshows and tell everyone about it. Everyone say, "Boy, you're really wonderful," and there, and we can be in the center. But Krishna's not easy like that. He's not cheap like that. He's darn clever too. So he knows. He knows what we're up to. He knows our little schemes and plots and plans and hypocrisies and the tendencies to cheat that we all have, where we keep ourselves in the center. So the actual devotees, they don't even keep as their goal exactly going back to Godhead. They keep as their goal loving love and service. That's what they keep as their goal. And they don't care. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained this. Janmani, janmani shrey bhavad tad bhakti hai chikitai. Let me be here, let me be there. All I ask for is to love and serve you. You place me where you want, but that I do want. I want to love and serve you and remember you and think of you. So a person, even in an immature stage, he's not exactly under his own karma. And even if he goes away, from his point of view, he's gone away. But Krishna still keeps an eye on him. So he hasn't gone away. It's like the child who runs away from home, runs away from his rich father's home, and he's living in the street, maybe. But his father has his eye on him. He knows he's there. And he's making his own arrangements, just waiting for the right moment to bring him back. So there may be some poor fellow on the street, and that person on the street, and they may appear to be in the same condition, but they're not actually, because the rich father's got his eye on his boy. And he won't give up, and he won't let him alone. No matter what. That's God, that's Krishna. So he's not actually under his karma in the same way someone else may be under their karma, even though superficially it may appear like that. Yeah? I mean, understand? Yeah. Understand what I mean?
Yeah, I understand what you mean, but
that's good. Really, you want to understand everything at once, but you have to pay the price. When you see someone who's advanced, however advanced they are, there's no use even becoming envious of them, and there's that tendency. It just means they've paid the price at some time, and you can have it too if you pay the price. But the only trouble is the price is high. It's everything. You have to give yourself if you want yourself. Krishna wants everything. He wants everything, your heart and everything. So we tend to give little, waiting to see how the reciprocation is, if we want to back out of the deal, so to speak. Yeah. Because it's frightening to give everything. Why? Because then who'll take care of me? So our faith and love isn't very developed. So that's what everyone does. But if we follow the process, follow it properly, and gradually, we increase. Any other day we can talk about it, because there's no more time. Okay. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna.